From Little Rock Public Radio, this is Insight with Jonathan Seaborn. Each week, I host thoughtful conversations with people helping to shape our civic, cultural, and economic life right here in Central Arkansas.
It often feels like we live in a time of growing division. Political disagreements, social media, and an increasingly fragmented media landscape can make it difficult to have meaningful conversations with people who see the world differently than we do. Yet strong communities depend on our ability to listen, understand, and find common ground. My guest today, April Chatham Carpenter and Glenn White of Arkansas Braver Angels, an organization dedicated to reducing political polarization and helping Americans engage more constructively. They host a podcast, On the Other Hand, which explores the challenges and opportunities that come with talking to people whose perspectives differ than your own. Today, we're going to discuss what drives polarization, why productive dialogue matters, and what each of us can do to have better conversation in our communities, workplaces, and families. Welcome. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, very happy to be here.
Great. So I would like to start off, for our listeners that are just unfamiliar with Braver Angels and the podcast as well, what is the organization? How does it connect it to the podcast? And what are y'all trying to do here in Arkansas?
Well, Braver Angels is a larger bridge-building organization, of which there are many across the nation. And it's one of the largest ones that tries to get people to learn to speak and listen to each other. In Arkansas, and in a lot of states, in fact, we hope that all 50 states have a Braver Angels presence. And in Arkansas, we have a Braver Angels Arkansas presence. And it is our attempt to bring the whole idea of citizenship and the courage to talk across our differences into local communities. Our podcast actually was started by Glenn, so I would love for him to talk about that.
Sure. It was at least my idea. April and I started it together. What happened was I was active in Braver Angels from the start here in Arkansas, and had recently retired from my career as a psychologist. And one of the things I had contemplated was maybe doing something like a podcast. I didn't have the technical know-how, but I felt like my skills and experience professionally would allow me to do that well. And so I was talking with April about that idea one day, and she says, well, I'll join you if you want. I was like, that's great, because I was going to need someone else to work with me. I didn't see myself doing this as a solo endeavor. And so we talked about it and came to the mutual decision that we'd kind of emulate the Braver Angels philosophy and what we were doing, and Braver Angels as an organization, Braver Angels Arkansas, agreed to support us, and that's kind of how we got started.
Is this pretty unique in the Braver Angels ecosystem to have this podcast kind of connected to the work that the state organization is doing?
I don't know of any other example, actually, that's doing this across the nation. They have, on and off, had a national podcast. I think right now they're kind of looking at ways of doing it. There certainly are people involved in Braver Angels at the national and local and state levels that have their own podcasts, like Wilkerson, for example, has Derate the Hate podcast, very well followed, and he works for Braver Angels, and so, but that's not a Braver Angels podcast that's connected to a state.
And what is the, the kind of mission or philosophy around the podcast? I know you said that it's tied to the mission of Braver Angels, but what is kind of the set goal with the podcast?
What we're trying to do is talk to community leaders in Arkansas. We occasionally branch out and talk to people outside the state, but the general idea is to emulate this civil, respectful way of talking together across differences. And in fact, one of the key things, the reason April and I make such a good co-host team, is because we have differing political philosophies generally. Of course, the more we talk, the more we find some things we have in common. That's true with most everybody when they talk across the divide. But that's one of the things that we wanted to do, is to be kind of a model for how you can have civil conversations. You can talk to different people from different views and have those difficult conversations and doing it in a respectful fashion and hopefully a productive method of communicating.
We also are, we really want these conversations to be learning conversations. So Glenn and I go in, we have questions that we're going to be asking that we send ahead of time to our interviewees, but we don't know what they're going to say. And so our goal is not to do gotcha, you know, we're trying to make them look bad. We really want to show people also that the work that these people are doing in their communities requires them often to work across political divides. And that means that they've got to, not just on our podcast, kind of we have to illustrate how it is that we talk to people from different perspectives, but they have to do it when they're accomplishing their goals of whatever it is that they might be talking about, you know, outside of our podcast.
Yeah, the country right now, there's a sense that it feels more polarized than it has in a while. And I imagine on certain days that can feel discouraging as you do the work that both of you do. But I'm curious, what gives you hope in this moment of extreme polarization?
One thought that keeps me going is that we've had rough times in this country before. I mean, goodness, we had a civil war, and we managed to come back from that and have some good times as a country. So I think it's still possible. But I think it's really critical that we do something to address it nowadays, because all the evidence from political scientists who've looked around the world at other democracies, when you have extreme political polarization, it begins to degrade the democratic institutions and culture and makes it hard to maintain that democracy. And so, that's one of our values. In fact, that's the reason Braver Angels was started, was because of the fear of losing our democratic way of government. And so We want to do everything we can, and we believe we've got the ability and the citizenry to do that.
One of the things that gives me hope is that I've seen the power of both skill building and community work in operation in Braver Angels. They really started out more as a skill building organization with, teaching speaking and listening skills, providing opportunities for experiential kind of experiences with talking across political divides or talking about different issues, in that might have different opinions. And so we saw that it worked. People continued to go, and they would to these events, and they would go and actually begin to start thinking about how can I communicate differently in my own relationships. And so our space, our kind of lane in Braver Angels, is really more in the calling in lane about how we can be better human beings in our communication with each other. I'm going to call you into relationship with me, but I have to be able to behave in a certain way that you also want to listen to me.
Yeah. Yeah, both parties have to come to the table in good faith. Yeah. So I'm curious, you both have an academic background, there's communication, there's psychology. How has your different backgrounds shaped how you approach this work?
Well, one of the things that my background as a psychologist is, you learn in graduate school to look to the science, and so you learn how to look into the literature, the research literature. So when I was thinking, before I even decided to do the Braver Angels gig, and I was thinking about retiring, I started looking into something that was starting to concern me back around 2016, was, the way things were going in the country. And so I wanted to know more. So I looked at the literature and found out a lot more than I anticipated about polarization, how people form beliefs, how they change those beliefs. And it's a fascinating area that's just chock full of all sorts of information from all sorts of disciplines. One of the key things to me that was a revelation was how much our decision making and our opinions are formed not by rational analysis and facts, but by emotions and by our identity of whatever tribe we happen to see ourselves as a part of.
You know, for me, Jonathan, in communication, I had for years have taught conflict management classes and interpersonal relationship classes, but never in my wildest dreams did I think I would be talking about the principles of speaking and listening and conflict management in a scenario in which we are in a divided nation like we are, in which we're cutting off family members, we're cutting out our neighbors who might have a different sign in their yard than we do. And so as I began to think about the possibility and saw Braver Angels doing this important work, I began to say, you know, how could I be involved in making a difference? In learning myself, it wasn't just about me making a difference. It was also about how can I be better in terms of my communication, with people who are different than me. And sometimes the people that are most difficult for me to talk to are people from my own side. So it's not just my, you know, across the political divide. It's also within our own camps and tribes that I have found these principles and ways of interacting to be so important.
And I would add that in my profession, you know, one of the things I did for decades was to provide psychotherapy that included things like marriage and family therapy. And so I was, you know, pretty conversant with the basic, you know, evidence-based approaches to dealing with conflict and trying to get people together. And I did that as part of my professional job. And then when I got involved with Braver Angels, I discovered this new application. And it really taught me things that I had not gathered from all of my professional training and experience, even though it was based on the same principles. It seemed like another animal when we're talking about political differences.
Yeah. In April, earlier you had mentioned kind of the skills aspect of Braver Angels, you know, outside of just the communication. Can you walk me through what, you know, I don't know if it's like in a form of a workshop or how Braver Angels hopes to teach these skills, but what does that look like?
Yeah, I actually use a acronym that Braver Angels uses in a lot of their workshops, and it's called LAP skills. And so it's not the only skills that we teach. We also teach, and I'll go through those in a second, but it's not the only skills we teach. We also teach how to find common ground and how to, you know, get past our stereotyping. But in our one-to-one conversations, listening is the L. The A can stand for lots of things: acknowledging the other person's perspective, agreeing if I can find an agreement, appreciating that they're willing to even share with me. So it could be a variety of asking a good question, you know, that I can respond back to. All those can be part of the A. It's really ways we show we listen. And then equally as important of that listening is, how do I share my perspective? And so the last P is perspective. I share it with I messages and tell stories about how I got to a place of where I am. But there's a P before the perspective, which is pivot, which is sometimes we call the magic sauce in Braver Angels, because I basically am asking for permission to share my perspective before I just lay it on them. The way that we communicate, I believe it needs to be invitational. We're inviting the person in to talk to us just as they are inviting us in to talk to them. And so I find those LAP skills actually useful in creating that kind of environment.
Has there been any bleed over between the podcast and those skills workshops, or have you, I'm assuming that you implement those skills into how you approach those conversations, at least in the podcast?
We try to do that the best we can. Certainly the listening is important. You'll hear us sometimes using the acknowledge skills. I do that a lot. I was just trained to do that all the time, which is to basically use what's called active or reflective listening. I would reflect back what I heard, which I find helpful because it helps clarify that I heard it right, and for our listeners of the podcast, it gives them another chance to hear it. And what I would try to do is a simplified summary of what I heard. And so that's an effective learning technique.
One of the struggles, well, maybe struggle is too strong of a word, but one of the things that we had to make a decision on early on, and actually our producer at the time pushed us because we pushed back. He wanted it to be kind of a fight on these podcasts, right? That he wanted us to get into arguments. And Neither Glenn nor I really wanted to do that, and so you will not hear much of our opinion expressed in the podcast. And so that's where it becomes different. It's like we're not pivoting, can I share my opinion? We are asking them to share their story. So we will oftentimes ask them to share about a time or a story in which they have worked across the political divide, and they might illustrate that with not knowing to call it the lap skills, but with those skills.
Mm-hmm. You know, May, the way I think about it is we don't actively give the other side to whoever's in front of us when we're interviewing them. But over the course of time, as we interview different people, then we have the opportunity to present people from all different sides. So you may not hear but one side or viewpoint with one guest. The next guest, you may hear very different viewpoints. So that's kind of the way I see we get to that perspective element.
So one of our most recent podcasts that we have done actually was with two state legislators who are across the political aisle, and we actually would love to do more of that on our podcast. And so if people, you know, end up hearing your podcast and say, I'd love to be on that with somebody else that might have a different perspective, then we would hope that they would reach out to us. And in those cases, we do ask them to tell about how they actually interacted with each other during the times in which they helped create something together. So rather than it being them fighting on air or us leading that discussion, then that's more of how it's done. Now, I will say this, we do have a potential for having a Arkansas TV, or if it goes back to Arkansas PBS, show that will be coming out, and we'll be doing some taping of it, that potentially we might invite people on that have different perspectives. So there's a possibility that we might branch out a little bit beyond what we're typically doing currently on the podcast.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that y'all pushed back on the idea of it being, kind of centered in conflict, as that seems counterproductive to the mission of what Braver Angels and what you seem to be pushing for as far as civil discourse.
Yeah, that idea of the old, what was it, point, counterpoint, and there's some others like that, but a lot of those garner the ratings because they have that built-in conflict and get people roused up on both sides, and that's not at all what we're about. We're about the opposite, actually, because the more emotional you get, the less productive and the more polarized it is. So we try to work in a very different direction. But I think it is helpful for us to have productive, honest, direct conversations about differences if we can keep it within the context of the skills that we try to abide by.
And I will say that I'm challenged by the guests that we have. There was one that we've done this year that I know that my values are not the same as they have. I mean, my values are not the same as theirs across the board, and yet I still was able to find something in common with them. In fact, lots of things in common. I'm not going to call out the guest, Glenn, for you to figure out which one it was, but I expect that our listeners may also feel the same way. And what I would hope is that they would not just quit listening because, oh, well, that's the kind of person they have on this podcast, but they would actually look through the past podcast and see the kinds of people that we tend to have on. And again, we're looking for, and this is a word that I learned from one of my colleagues, we're looking for positive deviance examples. And what I mean by that is examples of people who are doing it differently than we typically see in the news and in the media. So the deviance is the part that we're doing it differently, and positive means that they're doing it in a way that is respectful and recognizes the human dignity of the others that they're working with.
Braver Angels, this idea that's centered around kind of civil discourse, depolarization, it seems difficult to measure. And I'm curious if there is a metric or some sort of milestone that you measure against as you do this work.
That's something that we have talked about for some time, actually, at the larger Braver Angels national area. We tend to rely on self-reports of people where they were at the beginning and where they say they are at the end of a workshop. But, you know, people who are social scientists and natural scientists know that self-reports are limited in terms of our perspective. We do marketing kind of measures also in terms of, like, you know, would you recommend this to a friend? But it is one thing that I think is a limitation for the work that has been done in Braver Angels. Now, there are people out there doing the research on deliberative democracy that have polarization scales out there, but we have not used them per se at the national or state level.
And I'm not familiar entirely with it, but I know I understand there's research out there on the limitations of conflict-based approaches to getting, you know, improvements in you know, attitudes and functioning of the government and things like that.
We do have data, though, that shows that there are certain of our workshops and experiences that we offer at the national and local levels that do give more change. The likelihood of self-reported change, anyway, is greater. And those tend to be the smaller red-blue kind of workshops or common ground in which you are with a group of people that have different perspectives than you, and you are actually having to listen to their side and think about, what do I have in common with them? Those tend to seem to take the polarization levels down more than just a skills-based workshop does, in which we're really not necessarily talking to someone from the other side. So that's something that I think is interesting. It's just those workshops are hard to replicate because you've got, and to sustain, because you've got to find people from the different sides and perspectives to actually be willing to give 3 hours, or in the case of Common Ground and Red Blue, actually 6 hours of their weekend, or you know, 2 weekends to do.
And that's important because there's actually some other research that's well established in other areas. Like the one I was familiar with well before Braver Angels is that when people have mental health stigma about people who have mental illnesses, that all the education in the world will not change their attitudes. What changes their attitudes and their outlook is if they have a chance to meet someone with a mental illness diagnosis and to talk with them and have interaction. So it's that relationship that's the real healing factor, and that's the kind of thing that, you know, with the experiential workshops that April was talking about, I think it offers that. So there's a lot of research related to, I think, what's called contact theory that kind of affirms the effectiveness of what we're doing.
What I wish they would do evaluations on are the one-to-one conversations that they have a lot of guides for Braver Angels. They have them from anywhere from red, blue, to racial conversations, to even if a person's Jewish versus Palestinian or from different generations. And those, I think, they're 2 one-hour conversations that allows that kind of getting to know the other person and hearing their story and seeing, oh, that's their perspective. And it's those kinds of things, I agree with you, Glenn, in terms of contact theory, that really make a difference.
Yeah, which makes sense. You know, it's much harder to other something that you know personally. And just to be clear, not that Glenn is suggesting that someone with other views have a mental health.
No, that's just another area of research.
You know, let's say someone's listening to this and like many people across the country are navigating difficult conversations with close family members and friends, and they understand the skills you've talked about with, you know, the listening and the perspective and the pivot and everything like that. But they're still about to enter a difficult space with a loved one. What's something that you would suggest they keep in mind as they start these conversations?
You know, not all conversations have to be about politics or about our differences. And sometimes we can forget that we have more in common than we have differences. But when our emotions, when somebody brings up at the dinner table or, you know, at a family event, something about something going on in the world, which we have so many things going on in the world these days that it's easy to bring up something like that. And then all of a sudden they make one comment. It's that one comment or two that can cause your emotions just to be out of control. And then all of a sudden you're off to the races in this kind of argumentative, or you just like, I can't even talk to Uncle Fred. I'm not even going to talk to my sister or my brother about that. They're just out, you know, and you know, you can choose to label them on that one issue. You can choose to make your relationship about that one politician, or you can choose to make it bigger than that. So that's the decision I had to make with my sister, which I know I've told the story in multiple venues in terms of her. She and I voted for different political candidates in 2016 and in 2020. And so I could have cut her off. I mean, I blocked her on Facebook lots of times. And she knew that, you know, my relationship with her was much more important than who she voted for and even where she was getting her facts from and what news media she was listening to, because those were all different things than with me. And so I chose one day to sit down and actually not around anybody else. And I think that's really important, is this is a one-to-one conversation. Am I willing to truly have a learning conversation? Not to try to pick her points apart, not to try to make my points better than hers, but just to understand. And I made the choice at that point when I did have that initial conversation. I don't think I ever told her for sure where I was on that candidate. I just wanted to hear her story. And that broke something in the ice that had kind of started building up in my relationship with her, just because I did that. Not to prove she was wrong. I still disagreed with her, but I actually understood I had some agreement with her, and I didn't realize I had any. And so that was really helpful. So I don't know, Glenn, you might have some other ideas.
I'm going to expand on that, because I think what you're describing basically used the L and the lap skills, the listening, maybe the acknowledging too, and agreeing. But that's the important part, is the listening part. The thing I would add to that is that it's so easy to get emotional and entrenched when you're talking about specific political candidates and policies. So, you know, like you were saying, April, kind of take a bigger picture for a moment. Step back and just start getting curious and ask them, so what are your values that, you know, you're basing those beliefs on? Or, you know, you prefer these kinds of candidates and these kinds of policies. Tell me a little bit about the values that motivate your seeing things as that being the best way to go. And just kind of explore the values. And then you can find out, I actually have a lot of similar values. You just may have different perceptions about what's the most effective or perhaps moral way to approach it.
Mm-hmm. Well, in April, you mentioned, you know, Facebook, and I think we've all been in that situation where we've like muted a family member or whatever it may be. But I imagine that the proliferation of social media and our time online and all of this has greatly complicated this work, this idea of civil discourse. Are you able to speak to those challenges at all, or how Braver Angel views that potentially as a challenge, but I imagine also as an opportunity, because you have those platforms to use as well?
Yeah, you know, we do actually. There's actually a social media kind of e-learning course. And one of the things that Braver Angels has, and one of the things that they talk about in that, is that you should never have a political discussion really over social media. And part of the reason is, just take Facebook as an example. I post something that I think is absolutely my opinion. It's something that I maybe feel strongly about. I don't know who's going to get involved in that conversation. And at that point, I've got people that don't even know each other that are getting involved in the conversation and arguing against each other. As soon as I see that happen, I realize, oh, I didn't think that was even political. I'm going to take that down. And my reason is because they don't need to. They're spending a lot of energy arguing and they don't even know each other. If they were sitting in the same room, they would not be treating each other that way. And if I am doing something on social media that I wouldn't do in person, I think that's a good question for me personally to ask, then why? And it's because it's anonymous. Social media is like I don't get the accountability that I would if I was doing it in person. And so I really I know people have platforms, they have Substack, they have, you know, Instagram, they have Twitter, they have X, whatever it is, you know, and they might want to, you know, post certain things, but I am very careful what I post. Now, it doesn't mean that I don't post something that is controversial. I tend to have two things that I post about: bridge building and AI. Okay, bridge building, not maybe so much controversial, but AI, I would say probably is, okay? And so, you know, I'm sure that I get, you know, people look at that and they're like, oh, why did she post that? You know, but you have to think about what, you don't know what the reaction is of the people that are going to be around you. So, Glenn, I know that you really believe strongly in media literacy and that you've put together some resources on that. So I'm sure you have some thoughts as well.
Yeah, I was, well, talking about media literacy, but first I was just going to make this analogy that the ease with which we get nasty in social media when we don't in person, there's another way that happens too. Think about road rage. How many times are we going down the road in our car and somebody does something we don't like or whatever, and we can just get real nasty ourselves and get the emotion going? Would you do that if you were in line behind that person somewhere face to face? Probably not. So it's the same kind of thing. The more distance physically and emotionally and socially we have from someone, the easier it is to give in to those primal urges. Anyway, about media literacy, that's to me one of the key things that we have to do. You know, over time, you know, people in our society have learned to do things like to have good hygiene habits. You know, we take a shower every day usually, and then we brush our teeth and things like that. It's just good practice that we get a habit into. We are at the point now with social media and internet and mass communication, or where it becomes almost a survival skill in my mind, that we develop media literacy and good media hygiene. So that means learning some skills for assessing the veracity of what you see on media and, you know, how to communicate better, but really just watching out for things like either just basically fake things or people trying to rile you up with an emotional appeal. Things like that, we're so susceptible to that in this society because we don't have those skills developed yet. It's a fairly new, you know, development. Think about when television first started. Now we've got this two-way interaction that's just a few decades old. So we really have some work to do there. And I think it's really critical because it's contributing greatly to a lot of the polarization and division.
Yeah, and there's a whole other two or three podcasts worth of conversation around all of that. You know, that's something we talk here about a lot. You know, the need for increased media literacy education, especially when it comes to social media. You're right. Like, am I asking myself why I'm seeing this information? Is this person that I may potentially argue with, are they even really a person? You know, like there's so much of that that muddies the water. And it is it's an interesting topic. Like I said, that's probably a whole other podcast. I'm curious, what's next for Braver Angels? What is on the horizon?
You know, we have a brand new, well, he's been in 8 months, I think, probably by the time this is aired, maybe 10 months that he's actually will have been in his CEO position. But he is leading us into a new kind of, still the same lane, but he calls it courageous citizenship. And what he wants is us to go beyond, this is a CEO, I'm sorry, I don't even think I mentioned that, so let me just start this over. We have a new CEO in our National Braver Angels organization, Mari Giles, and he is really directing us to focus on not just what we can do in terms of skill building, but also in terms of how we can make a difference in our communities and at the local level, and believes that obviously we can make maybe a difference. There can be common ground and bridge builders, you know, at the national level and work there. But it's where politics is local, and where we're really influenced a lot is what's going on in our communities and our states. And so what can we be doing to be courageous? And he talks about this as being, you know, all the way from we're recognizing there are things inside of us that maybe lend towards not having relationships with people who are outside of our bubble. So we need to be working on that. But also that we need to be thinking about what are issues that are important for our community that we don't individually have the bandwidth to solve, but we need our neighbors to come with us to solve some issues in that particular community. We have a group right now in Braver Angels in Arkansas that's up in the Eureka Springs, Berryville area, and they're really, tourism is a huge area. It's a huge income source for their area, and yet there are rural and urban perspectives on tourism that are causing some divides. So that group up there is they're getting together and they're actually trying to figure out how might they get some conversations going. We have another person that is working in Conway, and he's meeting at coffee shops and is actually trying to have people have dialogue over specific issues because Conway is kind of built around a lot of coffee shops. We have another group in Hot Springs that does civil dialogue and conversations on a monthly basis in their local libraries to try to talk about topics. So for me, what's next is seeing in Arkansas in particular, how can we build this work at the local community level where we get people together who are neighbors, who, you know, their kids are on the same soccer or football teams, or they go to the same high school, or they go to the same churches, or maybe the church is right across the street from theirs that they go to. How can we get these people together to actually work on issues that are important for their community? And, you know, what would that take? And so that would be my vision for Arkansas. I've just stepped into a state coordinator role in Arkansas and Braver Angels, and so that's my vision. But those kinds of relationships and community, that community work takes time to develop.
And you know, yeah, I would add to that, our founders of this country, when you look back at what they had to say, it was an experiment, this new democracy. And there was no guarantee it was going to last, and there still is no guarantee. But they said, and I think it was great insight on their part, that some of the key factors that must be present for it to survive long term is that the citizens, as much as possible, each and every one should be educated. They should be what they called virtuous, which, you know, I would say means basically having some solid pro-social values where you can work together, even when it's difficult, and then that the people are involved citizens, which gets at what the new CEO is talking about, is that we all need to be involved in our democracy. I've heard someone say democracy is not a spectator sport, and that's true. Yeah. Now, different ones of us can be involved at different levels. Maybe if you are working to keep your family going, you don't feel like you have much time. But if you have time to vote, you need to take a little bit of time to educate yourself on the candidates before you vote. And that would be maybe I'd suggest is the least you can do. If you have a little more time, maybe you could join a community organization that's working towards something good for the community that you agree with. And in doing that, you're going to be around other people who have differing ideas, maybe differing political philosophies, but you're forming relationships with those people and getting to know them on a personal level so that you're less likely to do the road rage or social media outburst.
Fantastic. And for full transparency, Little Rock Public Radio is a distribution partner with the On the Other Hand podcast. So people can find the podcast on our website or through the NPR app. But if someone wants to get involved with Braver Angels, or they want to hear the podcast on a different platform, where can they hear it and how can they get involved?
Well, we're on most popular sites if you're looking for us for the On the Other Hand podcast. So just take a look at it. But a guaranteed, there are two guaranteed. The website that hosts us is Podbean. So if you went to podbean.com and looked up for On the Other Hand, in fact, it's just ontheotherhand.podbean.com. Even better is we also have a page on our Braver Angels Arkansas website devoted to that, and you can find things there about us and a link to the episodes. And that that address for that is arkansas.braverangels.org. And then when you go there, you just go to the menus at the top and look for the Arkansas podcast.
And I assume they can also find information about how to get involved at that same
address. Oh, yeah. We've got lots of information about how to get involved. We've got things that they can learn, skills they can use. There's information. There are links to the national organization, to some of the e-courses that April mentioned before. So there's a lot of things on there, including ways to contact us if they have questions or if they want to get involved. We'd love to have people involved with us and to volunteer to help, because it's a big need and it's a big ask. So the more people that work on it, the more successful we'll be.
Fantastic. Well, thank you both for joining me today, and good luck.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Really appreciate it. Enjoyed the chat.
Insight with Jonathan Seaborn is produced in the heart of Central Arkansas by Little Rock Public Radio, a service of UA Little Rock. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast or on the NPR app.